WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this hump day, January 13th, 2016. So glad you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon. We've got a great hour in store for all of you out there, folks. Of course, we will be recapping the action in the local sporting world from last night, particularly when it comes to the hardwood. Michigan upsetting number 3 Maryland. What a game it was. We will recap how it took place and how John Beilein and company were able to pull off the upset. We'll also chat about the Detroit Pistons, who fell to the San Antonio Spurs last night at the Palace. Tony Parker, I tell you what, he certainly tapped into the fountain of youth last night. Also, Isaac Constance, he was at the East Lansing and Grand Ledge boys basketball game last night. He'll give us a report from there. You also get a chance to hear from head coach of the undefeated East Lansing Trojans, Steve Finnemore. And we will chat about a move, a big, big move happening in the NFL. The St. Louis Rams will make a return to Los Angeles, California. Can you believe that? All of that, as well as take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. Call in to be a part of the show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, well, let's start with a few of the top performers from last night's boys and girls high school basketball action. Let's start with the boys. Quan Crockett of Weberville, he paced the Spartans with 28 points in their 62-52 loss to Byron. Malik Adams of Grand Ledge, senior guard, had 24 points in a 60-57 loss to East Lansing. Riley Lewis of Williamston, the senior guard, had 24 points in a 73-56 win over Hazlitt. Preston Granger of Lansing Christian, he poured in 23 points and 8 rebounds in the Pilgrims' 67-52 win over Perry. And Sean Cobb of Williamston, the freshman, had 21 points for the Hornets in the win over Hazlitt. We'll have more from the East Lansing and Grand Ledge boys basketball game later on in the show. You don't want to miss that. Terry McCutcheon of East Lansing, the senior guard, had 25 points and 8 assists to lead the Trojans to an 82-46 win over Grand Ledge. Jada Hampton of East Lansing, the sophomore, had 20 points and 5 steals for the Trojans against Grand Ledge. Leia Hartman of Okemos, she had 19 points for the Chiefs in a 52-34 win over Sexton. Shannon Tilwell, the senior, had 18 points to lead the Hazlitt Vikings in their 66-48 win over Williamston. And Autumn Kinsman of Mason, the junior center, had 17 points, 14 boards, and 4 blocks in a 40-28 victory over Eden Rapids. Great performances last night from all of them. Wow. All right, Michigan State football, they just missed out on 3 straight Associated Press top 5 finishes for the second time in its history, finishing number 6 in the final poll released. Mark D'Antonio Spartans, who went 12-2, were number 3 entering the college football playoff, but dropped 3 spots after losing 38-0 to Alabama in the December 31st Cotton Bowl semifinal. MSU finished number 3 after the 2013 season and number 5 after last year, giving the program 3 straight top 10 finishes for the first time since 1955 to 1957 under Duffy. The University of Michigan men's basketball team used a strong all-around performance to hold on to a 70-67 win over the Maryland Terrapins on Tuesday night inside the Chrysler Center. Of course, Maryland came into that matchup ranked number 3. Number 3 in both the AP and the coaches poll, I should say. Junior guard Zach Irvin, he was great last night. He led all scorers with 22 points on 8 of 14 shooting, including 3 of 7 from behind the arc. Junior/sophomore Duncan Robinson added 17 points on 5 of 9 shooting from the 3-point range. Junior guard Derek Walton Jr. was the Wolverines' final double-figure scorer, posting a double-double with 12 points and 10 boards. We'll have more on that game in just a sec. Number 18, Michigan State women's basketball team hits the road to take on Indiana tonight at 7 p.m. The game will be televised on BTN. Plus, the Spartans have won 8 of their last 9 games. Interesting stats here. This week, the Spartans are first in the nation on 3-point field goal defense, as Michigan State's opponents are shooting only 23% from beyond the arc this year. MSU is also 7th in the country and 2nd in the Big Ten in rebound margin with a plus 14.4 margin. George Washington and Maryland are tied for first in the country in rebound margin at plus 18.2. The San Antonio Spurs, they outscored the Detroit Pistons 57-41 in the second and third quarters, then held off a Pistons rally in the fourth to win 109-99. Tony Parker scored a season-high 31 points, and LaMarcus Aldridge had 22 points and 13 rebounds in the Spurs' ninth straight dub. Manu Ginobili added 15 points, while Tim Duncan put up 14-9. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope led the Pistons with 25 points, while Andre Drummond added 17 points and 10 rebounds. Reggie Jackson had 10 points, 11 assists, but went 3 for 13 from the field and struggled to guard Tony Parker. And the Detroit Tigers are among the teams talking with the Rockies about their left-handed outfielders. Fox Sports Baseball insider Ken Rosenthal is reporting that. Those outfielders include Carlos Gonzalez, Corey Dickerson, and Charlie Blackman. The team's target is unclear, and no deal is close as of right now. And the St. Louis Rams will now be, very soon, the LA Rams. That's right, moving to Los Angeles. We'll have more on that in just a second. And Jordan Spieth, the 22-year-old golfer, has signed a deal with Coca-Cola. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in to be a part of the show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let the show begin.
Chip on our shoulder, especially when two of our brothers go down, Spike and Karis. You know, they're our caps and our seniors. We got this one for them.
Talk about the way this defense played at the end of the game. You seem to come up with a lot of stops, and you hold their leading score to just 2 points.
Yeah, we knew this wasn't going to be easy. You know, Maryland is a great team. They're a top five team. We're just able to get the big stops at the end.
How are you feeling in this game? You guys had 3 players in double figures. You lead the way.
We had a great game. You know, it was a team effort on the offensive end and defensive end. I'm just proud of our guys.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Guys, let's go back to you in Chicago.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. Oh boy, happy day, happy day, happy day. It is hump day. Hump day, hump day, Wednesday, January 13th. Hopefully you guys are having a fantastic week thus far and staying warm. Man, oh man, has this Michigan weather been hurting us this week or what? We knew it was coming. We knew we couldn't dodge bullets for too long, all right? But it's been snowing just about every day this week so far. Snowed a bit last night. We all know what took place on Monday. And a bit cool out today. It's been cool all week. It's supposed to stay like that the entire week. But hopefully you guys are staying warm, all right? It can certainly be dangerous out there. But so glad you allow Current Sports again to be a part of your weekday afternoon. What you just heard was, of course, the voice of Zach Ervin. Just moments after Michigan upset number 3 Maryland in Ann Arbor at the Chrysler Center. What a game it was. Just back and forth. Both teams trading buckets. A lot of action. A lot of action and very entertaining. And, you know, if you're a Michigan fan out there and you're watching that game last night, I'm pretty sure many of you guys are just sitting there saying, finally, 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 we get a marquee win over an impressive opponent. Because there's been moments throughout this season in which Michigan has been right there, so close to getting that marquee win, or those marquee wins, plural. I mean, because they've had multiple opportunities to do so, but have just come up short in the waning moments of action. And I really had a feeling, watching that game last night, I really had a feeling that Michigan some way, you know, was going to blow that game. I mean, because we've seen it happen throughout this year thus far. Looking at those marquee losses that they've had approaching that, finally, a breakthrough against Maryland last night. Again, they lost on November 25th versus number 18 UConn. They lost on December 8th at number 19 SMU, Larry Brown's squad, which they're playing unbelievable basketball right now. And then also, you know, a few days ago, on January 7th, they lost at number 20 Purdue, allowed them to go on a run late in that game, relinquished the lead, and then the Boilermakers just took it from there. And you just kind of had the feeling. I mean, watching this game, especially, you know, you got a feel for John Beilein and his team, because they don't have their best player in Caris LeVert. You know, and you kind of equate it to what Michigan State had been going through with Denzel Valentine for 3 games when he went out with the arthroscopic knee surgery. The big question was, how in the world were the Spartans going to respond? And frankly, you know, Tom Izzo's team matured a lot, and they got better. They got better. I mean, again, players were forced into roles that they had to flourish in, and if they didn't flourish in them, I'm pretty sure they would have had more than an Iowa loss during that time period. But for Michigan, it's like, man, I mean, when is he going to come back? That's the big question. So just like in the same context of Sparty, the Maize and Blue needed players to step up. And they just haven't. They haven't been able to step up consistently throughout an entire game when going against big opponents. And last night, number 3 Maryland rose into town, and they upset them. A 70-67 win, 3-point dub for Michigan. And, you know, this is the first U of M win over a top 5 team since January 18th of 2014. Are you kidding me? It's been that long? Again, the first U of M win over a top 5 team dating back to January 18th of 2014. Not even 2015 we're talking about here, folks. And that was at number 3 Wisconsin. And prior to that, you know, the last time they beat a top 5 team at home in Ann Arbor happened to be much later than that, actually. That was number 4 Duke in December of 2008. So this was the first win in Ann Arbor for the Michigan men's basketball team since 2008. That's unbelievable stuff, folks. And you watch this game, and then, you know, I talk about, you know, when I was watching, I'm saying, all right, here we go. Here's U of M's about to give this game up. Because they threw away a 13-point lead midway through the second half. As Maryland center, Diamond Sante, how good was he, right? He started to dominate. I mean, he had 22 points, 11 boards. And then what happened? Michigan didn't lie down. They didn't get depleted. Their confidence kind of soared in that moment. They knew they needed to step up and do something to counteract what was taking place. And in the final stretch, that's really when we saw that junior class for U of M step up. Unbelievable stuff. How about Mark Donnell? My goodness. I mean, he was great. He was clutch last night. You know, he had that 3-point play late in the second half that really started to move the momentum. And then Derek Walton Jr., he pops a 3 And then Zach Irvin, he comes down and hits another three. I mean, wow. It was just an impressive stretch. They responded. Those juniors stepped up and said, you know what? We're not about to get snake bitten once more. We're tired of this. And they responded. Derek Walton had a fantastic game. He was just 4 of 13 from the field, but he had 12 points and, get this, 10 boards, a double-double for Derek Walton Jr. And then Zach Irvin, the emergence of him last night. I mean, he was hitting threes left and right, folks. Very impressive outing for him. He had 22 points. He was 8 of 14 from the field, 3 of 7 from the three-point line. Very impressive outing by Zach Irvin. And again, they did this without their best player still. Caris LeVert is still not on the court. Impressive stuff. And then, you know, what really stood out to me on the opposite side of things when looking at Maryland in this game, Melo Trimble, a player who certainly is going to take his talents to the NBA after this year, I believe, and be a high pick. Melo Trimble was relatively silent last night. 1 of 7 for just 2 points, just 3 assists in 30 minutes of work. 2 points? And when I saw that, 2 points next to the name of Melo Trimble, that didn't even sound right. I mean, that's crazy stuff. Also, Duncan Robinson, 17 points. He was 6 of 10 from the field. And again, not imploding when the game was on the line. Finally, we saw Michigan say, you know what, we're not about to lose another game like this. Very impressive stuff. And who knows, maybe, you know, the game of basketball is so funny. You know, maybe this you know, helps Michigan. Maybe this is a turning point in their year, something we'll look back as their season progresses and say, you know what, this is where this team grew up. This is where this team got better. Only time will tell. Again, they will take on Iowa this Sunday. Michigan State, of course, plays Iowa, trying to get a bit of revenge tomorrow night at the Breslin. I want to remind you guys to keep it locked to WKAR.org. I'll be filing a post-game report after the dust settles in that one. And then, of course, then Iowa will move on to play Michigan. But this is a solid opportunity for them. You know, they beat Maryland now, and they have an opportunity to beat another ranked team this Sunday. A solid team in the Big Ten in Iowa. And if they do that, hey, they could steamroll, without a doubt. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. One of them by right now, the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports. His name is Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing?
Doing well, Al. Like you, I caught that game last night, and really, I was shocked. Shocked by the seemingly absent Melo Trimble. Like you said, 2 points. This guy's going to be a high lottery pick. He could be top five even. That's not a reach. And Michigan just hushed him up. They face guarded him throughout the game. They employed a little bit of a one-man. They alternated defenders on him to keep the defenders fresh. And that's another thing. You mentioned Derek Walton might have not been his best shooting performance, but he was part of that combination, that defense that really hushed up and quieted Melo Trimble. So that was huge for the Michigan Wolverines. And then you look on the side of Maryland, Rashid Suleiman had to pick up all of the slack just about, and he was forced to shoot a couple deep threes late in the game that really Maryland would usually prefer Trimble to take. Not this time around, because Michigan's defense was so good on him. Off-ball defense. You see how valuable it is. If you don't let a guy get a ball, he can't score. So it was an excellent showing from the Wolverines, and they're now 13-4. That is not a bad record. And all of their losses have came to quality opponents, maybe not in the most glamorous fashion. Yes, they lost to Purdue double digits. They lost to SMU by double digits, but both of those are really good teams. So I think this Michigan team is coming together, and I think the best thing that they saw yesterday was Zach Irvin step up to the plate, really take over the shoes of Caris LeVert, who does just about everything for this team. This is a team that relies heavily on threes and on the offense created by LeVert for his teammates as well. He's the leading assist man on that team. So to see Zach Irvin really step up, attack the rim, hit a few big shots down the road, then this could be great for this team going forward.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for what took place last night happens to be the emergence of Derek Walton Jr. and Zach Ervin. I mean, those two combined had 34 points. They were the really the anchors for Michigan. When they needed a big bucket, when they needed a big play, those guys stepped up. And we just saw them just kind of take over the game. Those two, I mean, maybe we'll see an emergence of a consistent tandem between those two. But it was very impressive to watch them just go to work. And, you know, I don't know what the status of Caris LeVert is right now moving forward. Who knows if he will return this Sunday when Michigan does play Iowa. But nonetheless, this is a very good win. And when you look at their record, again, you know, as you noted, Isaac, 13-4, 3-1, only one loss in the Big Ten, only one etch on that Big Ten record right now, which is the same that could be said for Michigan State right now. So, hey, they're competing in the conference, and that record still puts them in contention to possibly win a Big Ten championship. Who knows? Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. As I noted, after our first break, we're going to recap one of last night's most intriguing boys basketball games between East Lansing and Grand Ledge, a battle within the CAAC Blue Conference. Boy, oh boy, is Steve Fenimore squad good or what? Isaac was in the house for that one. We'll get to that one in just a second. I want to get your thoughts, because I want to pose this question right now so we can take your calls as the show moves on. But I want to get your thoughts on the St. Louis Rams getting approval to go to L.A. What do you guys think of that? And what do you think the overall, I guess you can say, the overall perception is? What do you think the overall perception is from those who reside in L.A.? Is this good for the NFL to have an NFL team in Los Angeles? And what's it going to take for that franchise to bring in numbers and succeed? I want to get your thoughts on the Rams moving to L.A. And again, if you haven't heard, also the Chargers, they have the approval to possibly become a second team in the proposed Inglewood Sports Palace. So we'll break down that in just a sec, but I want to get your thoughts on it. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, let's talk about the Detroit Pistons last night as well. Some great basketball on television, other than, of course, that Michigan and Maryland game. Very intriguing matchup between the Detroit Pistons and the San Antonio Spurs, who are on a bit of a win streak. The Pistons were, I should say, but were totally just stopped in their tracks at the hands of the Spurs. Tony Parker, wow, was he big last night or what? 13 of 19 from the floor. 31 points. He was a perfect 7 of 7. Didn't miss a shot in the third quarter alone. He gave Reggie Jackson the blues. And speaking of Reggie Jackson, not a great game for Reggie. 10 points, 3 of 13 from the floor. He had 5 turnovers. He had 11 assists, though, so he did get his teammates involved to make this thing competitive. Again, just a 10-point loss for the Pistons. It really got ugly, though, in that third quarter. The Pistons actually trailed by 19 points in that third quarter. KCP, he was big, at least when it comes to scoring, 25 points for him. But LaMarcus Aldridge and Tim Duncan, I mean, the Pistons had no answer for those two down low. Aldridge with 22 points, 13 boards. Tim Duncan, 14 points, 9 boards. You know, it really amazes me, and I feel like I say this every year when mentioning the San Antonio Spurs, it just amazes me how guys like Tony Parker, how guys like Tim Duncan, even guys like Manu Ginobili, how there's veterans on this team. The Spurs have like the perfect mix between veteran leadership and efficient youth, well, without a doubt. But it amazes me how Tony Parker, who's a veteran in this league, Reggie Jackson went on to say, you know, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's so crafty. I mean, this is a guy who's up there in age, but still can put up 31 points whenever he wants to. Such a great point guard. And then Tim Duncan. Timmy, I mean, my goodness, I've been watching him, you know, since I was in elementary school, and he's still putting up consistent numbers. It amazes me, you know, with the system that Greg Popovich runs, it amazes me just how efficient those veteran players can still be in a system in which the scoring load is shared, and they play great defense. Again, they share the basketball so well. It's really fun to watch if you enjoy good basketball. If you respect the game, the Spurs are so fun to watch. Now, again, you can argue that on the contrary, you know, with the Golden State Warriors. I mean, they're certainly the Warriors are certainly more fun to watch because they throw up a bunch of threes and all that kind of stuff. But if you respect the game of basketball, you appreciate what the San Antonio Spurs do when they hit the court, without a doubt. And the Spurs, superior defense. You know, going back to their defense, I mean, how many times did we see the Pistons stymied last night? They just look utterly confused as to what to do offensively. The Spurs right now, they are only allowing, get this, 93.4 points per 100 possessions, folks. That is number one in the league. No other team is doing that. Again, only 93 points per 100 possessions. That's just crazy. It's like less than a point a possession. That's unbelievable stuff. Unbelievable stuff with what the Spurs are doing right now. And, you know, the other conversation, the other layer to what we saw last night happens to be, of course, centered around Andre Drummond. I actually saw a few columns written, one by Vince Ellis, who has been on the show before, of the Detroit Free Press. Of course, Vince Ellis is a beat writer for the Free Press covering the Detroit Pistons. And, you know, he wrote an interesting piece concerning Stan Van Gundy's comments surrounding Andre Drummond, the Pistons center. And this has been a conversation that we've had here on the show before and a conversation that the basketball world will have for quite some time until we may see a rule change. I don't think the rule should be changed because at the end of the day, you got to go out there and knock down free throws. And again, the conversation I'm talking about is that Stan Van Gundy made a comment that Andre Drummond left him no choice but to bench him because, again, you know, we see a lot of teams, any team that plays the Pistons, especially if it's a close game, you're allowed to intentionally foul a player up until the two-minute mark of the fourth quarter. And what that allows is it allows a poor free throw shooter like Andre Drummond to go to the line. It takes the hands out of the Pistons' offense and puts it in the hands of Andre Drummond to go to the line and hit free throws. And Andre just has been completely horrid this year. He went 1-for-6 last night, and he is currently, folks, on a 6-of-33 free throw streak. That's crazy. You know what that amounts to percentage-wise? He is shooting 18% from the free throw line right now during the stretch of about 40 free throws. The last 40 free throws he's taken. That is poor. And hey, I feel Stan Van Gundy with what he says. I mean, he you know, it forces his hand to sit Andre Drummond. We saw last night Andre sit for the final 5 minutes and 32 seconds of the game, and Aaron Baines come in. And it forces that because if you can't go to the free throw line and hit free throws, and if we're wasting possessions and putting alternate possessions into the hands of our opponents, then what do you expect? So I feel no sympathy at all for Andre Drummond, and I totally agree with Stan Van in this situation. Even though Andre Drummond, he's arguably the best center in the league. Hey, he may be a starting center for the Eastern Conference All-Star team next month. Unbelievable player. I mean, he's a force down low. But when it comes to the simple fundamental of shooting a free throw, Andre, you remind me of Shaquille O'Neal, brother. You got to get better. You got to get better. Isaac, what's your thoughts on last night's game, and what's your thoughts on the Hacker Drummond lifestyle we've been seeing throughout this year for the Pistons?
Well, you know, like you said, this has become a common strategy for so many teams because why not? The NBA allows it. Like you said, the average mark in the NBA for offensive efficiency is about 1 point per possession. So if you foul somebody off ball who shoots less than 50%, then you win that possession pretty much because then there's a bigger chance that they don't even score 1 point in that possession. So Andre Drummond, I'd foul him all day if I'm other teams. And we've seen Greg Popovich use this strategy over and over again. He did it to Shaquille O'Neal. He did it to DeAndre Jordan. He's doing it to Andre Drummond. And it's smart. I mean, I don't like it for the game. I'm a little bit ambivalent on whether I'd like to see a rule change or not because at the end of the day, like you said, it's a free throw. It is a free point. It is 2 free points up there. When I played in high school, I was a bench warmer. But I made 6-of-6 free throws in my career.
Nice. You know, my man Isaac, all right.
Exactly. So if you're Andre Drummond, you've got to do better than 1-6. You are paid handsomely to play this game. You've got to do better than 1-6. With that being said, this Pistons team ran into a Spurs team which was playing with their head on fire just about. They were off the rocker. They were playing so well. 9-game win streak now for the San Antonio team. They've got the best points differential in the NBA. And like you mentioned, the best defense in the league, both efficiency-wise and just in total points allowed. So, I mean, this is a tough game to win, especially with Markieff Morris still struggling coming back and all of that. But at the same time, there are so many things that you can point out where the Pistons could have done better. Reggie Jackson, you need a little more consistency for him. That's the key word right there, consistency for Reggie Jackson. Some games he looks like, I don't know, a mini Russell Westbrook. Other games, he looks like he deserves to be a sixth man behind Brandon Jennings. So, you know, I think this team, it's just about still building the pieces together. They obviously have talent, but this result doesn't really shock me. And, I mean, you've got to find a way to stop the Spurs veterans, though. And they beat you in the post over and over again with Tony Parker and Tim Duncan. You've got to keep them out. You've got to repel them, especially with Andre Drummond on the floor, which for a lot of that game, he was not because of course, the free throw shooting troubles.
Yeah, and you know what? One thing I've always said about the Pistons this year, they take minutes off. I mean, it's so crazy watching this team, you know, from the, you know, the first on to the fourth quarter, because they, you know, there have been games I've watched and the Pistons have come out with this incredible energy. They're amped up defensively. Then all of a sudden the second quarter hits and they're just relaxed, letting guys go up in the paint, easy layups, uncontested shots, not pushing the basketball. Then the third quarter hits. And a totally different team. You know, Stan Van Gundy may have you know, gave him an inspirational speech at the half, and they come out just everything is in sync. Everyone's mentally there, and you know we see that go away after like 5 or 6 minutes or so. I mean, they need to find a way to mentally not check out of a game at any moment, and that's easier said than done with this team. And going back to the Hacker Drummond conversation before we hit this break. When it comes to Andre Drummond, and even just across the league, when it comes to, you know, the hack of whoever, there's something new that I've seen this year that I haven't seen in other years. Now, again, the rule states that you can intentionally foul a player and send that individual to the line up to 2 minutes left in the game, and then it becomes a technical foul. But what I've seen, it's very clever, and I haven't seen it until this year, but what I've seen is players, you know, who they want to intentionally foul, they, you know, and if someone's at the free throw line under 2 minutes, they'll like jump on the back of a player while whoever's shooting a free throw, they'll jump on the back of, let's say Andre Drummond is lined up, you know, while waiting for a rebound on a free throw. I've seen. And I forget, I think it was like the Celtics game. I think they were playing the Celtics or something like that, I believe, or the Clippers, something like that. The Pistons were playing someone. I think it was the Clippers, I want to say. Yeah, because it was actually J.J. Redick who jumped on the back of Andre Drummond. I remember that now. And he intentionally jumps on the back of Andre Drummond acting like, quote-unquote, he's going for a rebound. And, of course, they call a foul, not an intentional foul, because technically I guess it's not an intentional foul, but it is, really.
He's going for the ball, Come on.
Yeah, exactly, right. He's going for the rebound. And it sends Andre Drummond to the line. But I've seen that. I even saw it on Christmas Day.
Yep.
I forget who it was, who was involved with that one. But I think they're going to really look at this rule after this year, Isaac, and start to address that issue as well. We're starting to see that as well.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. And like you, I had not seen it even once before this year. It's a brilliant idea. It lets
you
keep the team's best players off the court if they can't shoot free throws in the final 2 minutes. It lets you avoid all the repercussions of possibly fouling them off ball. So it makes sense. But like you said, I think that's something that the NBA does need to address just for the beauty and the pride of the game,
right.
Just for the purity of the game.
That's just trying to get over. I mean,
exactly.
Come on, you know? So, yeah. All right. Well, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll bring you coverage from last night's East Lansing versus Grand Ledge Boys High School basketball matchup. It was a fun one, folks. Isaac Constance was out there at East Lansing High School, and you get to hear from the one, the only, Steve Fenimore, who is the head coach of the Trojans. All of that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports. Hey folks, welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Busy, busy day today. It is, again, Hump Day Wednesday. You guys know each and every Wednesday here at the WKAR TV studios, Studio F to be exact, we record Current Sports TV each and every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. I am very excited because tonight I will be sitting down with now retired Detroit Free Press sports photographer, Julian Gonzalez. Yes, very cool guy who's done brilliant work for the Free Press. Actually, you know, covering 25 years with the Detroit Red Wings, shooting some incredible moments, including, of course, the Stanley Cup era of Hockey Town for the Wings back in the 90s. He's been such a staple to that team that they even decided upon hearing his retirement to honor him during a ceremony, which happened last month. So very cool stuff. But Julian and I, we're going to sit down and look at some of his favorite photos. He's going to break down the art of sports photography, all of that and so much more. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience for tonight's show, just simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. After I get off the airwaves here at our radio studio, Studio S here at WKAR, I'll be getting ready, writing my script, throwing on a suit. And then you know what? I have to make one stop, though, before I head back to the ComArts building to do tonight's Current Sports TV. You know what, Isaac? I have to make my way to the nearest gas station to play the Powerball.
Oh, yeah.
It is up to an unprecedented amount, the largest pot in U.S. history, $1.5 billion. I mean, you would have to be ludicrous not to play this thing tonight. Heck, you had to be ludicrous not to play it last week. I played it on Saturday when it was $900 million. There is a clear unlikelihood of you winning it, but why not spend $2 and get at least a number, you know?
Well, I'm not sure about ludicrous, but
it'll be ludicrous. I mean,
it's
the largest ever. You don't have $2.
But you also have one in, what, a billion chances of winning?
But it's $2, Isaac.
Oh, I'm still – no, right. Trust me, I'm going in.
Exactly.
I mean, don't worry about that.
You would be crazy not to play this, not to at least pay $2 to get one list of numbers and to have a shot at it, a quote-unquote shot, I should say.
So if – I mean, my fault – when you win, where are you buying?
That's the big question. That's everyone's been having fun with that. I mean, in having conversations, if you did hit, you know, the $1.5 billion jackpot. Now, if I understand this correctly, doesn't, like, the government take half of that, right?
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Close to it.
And it's great, though, because I know when it comes to the Michigan lottery, at least, those who play and spend money, all that money, you know, whatever is unclaimed, I mean, it goes to schools and whatnot, which is very, very cool. But if I was to hit the jackpot, I don't know. I've thought about that. I would probably first hook up my mom's. You know what I mean? I think that's the first thing I'd do. Buy her a house, a new car, something like that. I would donate some money to my church, without a doubt. Definitely move. I may sign off Current Sports. I don't know. I feel like, all right, I'm done. I'm not working for the rest of my life. No, I would probably. I love what I do so much. I'd probably still be working, even though I'm like a billionaire at that point. But I don't know. There's so many things you can do with that money, you know, but just unbelievable stuff. You think anybody's going to win tonight? And what would you do with the money, Isaac?
If I had to guess, I'd say there will be a winner tonight. I'm not sure who, but obviously as the money goes up, people have more chances of winning because more and more people enter and fund the Powerball and all of that. But if I won, man, I'm buying a house in Lake Como, an apartment in London. I'm buying a... Let's see what car. Those new Ford GTs, they've got all those commercials. Those are nice, American-made. I'd support them.
Okay.
Donate some money to charity, set
the
up my
GTs,
mom and pops.
That's a Mustang, right?
No, GT is.
What is it?
There's a Ford GT Mustang, but there's also a Ford GT.
And oh, gotcha.
It's
all
just
right.
A flat-out sports car. It can go fast. And the one I saw in person had speakers right behind the head seat or the head pillow or whatever
man.
You call it.
You're trying to go deaf.
Oh, yeah. So, no, if I got that money, I can afford an ear doctor, whatever you need. So, Yeah, I mean, I'm not worrying about it.
You'll be taken care of.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, man.
And then staying in school, of course. Staying in school and working.
Oh, that. Oh man, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I need to pay off these student loans. So, yeah, that'll probably be the first thing I do. I would pay off all of my student loans that I accrued at Michigan State University, and then I'll splurge a bit, all right? But very cool stuff. $1.5 billion. Wow. Yeah, so I'm going to do that before I hit the airwaves for Current Sports TV tonight at 6 p.m. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to talk about last night's East Lansing and Grand Ledge high school boys basketball game, a very intriguing matchup when looking at both of these squads. The Commons have a solid core, and again, it's been well documented how good Steve Fenimore and his Trojan boys have been this year. They have not lost a game. They entered, of course, last night's matchup undefeated. Grand Ledge, an opportunity to possibly knock off the mighty Trojans and possibly, you know, cause a tie atop the CAAC Blue Conference. That did not happen. It was a 60-57 loss. Very close game. Very gritty game. And
we're 60-47.
Oh, 47. Oh, I see 57 here in LSJ. Okay, they got that wrong.
It is 47.
So 60-47. Oh, I'm sorry then. Okay, it was not a close game then at the end of the stretch then. Okay, I'm sorry about that. I'm reading LSJ here. They have it as 57. Okay, so 47. 60-47. Isaac, of course, you were in the house for that game. We're going to get your thoughts in just a second. But here is what head coach Steve Fenimore had to say after the win.
Well, our coaching staff was a little upset at the half. It was a 20-20 game, and we felt like we weren't playing East Lansing basketball. We kind of succumbed to their style of play. Heck of a team, well-coached team. But at halftime, we came out, we got a 28-7 third quarter. So we did well. We came out of the locker room. I told them we're proud of them because we take everybody's best hit now. We're on top of the conference. We're 7-0. You're going to get everybody's A game. We moved the ball a little better. We got the ball inside to Brandon Johns, our All-American. More guys got touches. In the first half, I thought we were a little selfish. We call it the disease of me. And Pat Riley talks about that. We talk about it with our team. We weren't sharing the ball as well as we normally do, and we got back to that.
Coach Brandon Johns had a huge second half. What did he change to make that work for him?
I think Brandon, being 16 years old and a sophomore, you know, he goes through peaks and valleys, you know. He's definitely the best player in this area, so sometimes our players forget about him, and so we got to get him going, motivate him a little bit, and you know, say, hey, let's go, Brandon, let's turn it on. He gets it going on a defensive end, though. A lot of guys don't do it like that. He rebounds or blocks his shots or alters his shot, so once his defense is set, he does well on offense.
Is he the best player you've coached?
At 16 years of age, yeah. I coached Stephon Marbury, too, when he was a young kid, but Brandon's one of the best high school players I've ever coached.
And you guys try to play at such a fast pace.
We do.
So, in the second half, how did you manage to ratchet up the intensity and get to where you wanted?
We told them at halftime that we're not playing speed. Speed is one of our four keys almost every game, and we didn't speed the game up. Credit Grand Ledge, though. They kind of slowed us down a little. Their defense is pretty good. You know, we're like the heavyweight champ of the world. We're like Mayweather. We're going to get everybody's best shot. People want to be the first to knock East Lansing off while we're 7-0. So give credit to Grand Ledge, but give our guys more credit for bouncing back.
Were you surprised that it was so competitive in the first half?
You know, I wasn't, because I watched them on film, and they lost to Jackson. They beat Jackson, I'm sorry, by one, and we barely beat Jackson down there. So this is a tough conference. Everybody's going to bring their best on Tuesdays and Fridays, so we don't look past anyone. We got to get ready for Holt now on Friday night.
And you mentioned undefeated start. What do you make of it so far?
It's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's surreal. You know, each game you go in. Our thing this year is, though, don't worry about winning or losing. It's about the process. It's not a cliche. It's a lesson that we try to teach every day. Let's get better in practice.
Is it too early to say that this might be the best team you coach?
It's one of the best. My first year, I was here in 2010. We were 17-4 on the year. I don't want to jinx us this year, though, because we could turn around and lose on Friday. But it's fun coming to practice every day because we have low-maintenance guys and high-character guys. So that's why I really like these guys.
How can you not love Steve Finnemore, right? Again, that was the voice of Steve Finnemore for after last night's, again, East Lansing and Grand Ledge game. East Lansing, again, folks, they are right now undefeated. 4-0 in the CAAC Blue Conference, 7-0 overall. After them, you have Everett tied for second place in conference with Okemos now at 3-1. Grand Ledge now sits at 2-2 in the CAAC Blue Conference. They're 5-2 overall. Then you have Holt at 2-2 as well. Jackson at 1-2. Sexton, very surprising start to the year for me when it comes to Sexton. I thought they would be better this year. 0-4. And then you have Lansing Eastern at 0-3 in conference. So, Isaac, what'd you see last night, man? A very intriguing game. Again, a 60-47 win for the East Lansing Trojans. Brandon Johns, I mean, what'd he have? Like 11 rebounds, 4 blocks, 2 steals. Weston Miles, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals. DeAndre Robinson, he had 5 rebounds, 3 assists. What was your analysis of last night's game?
Yeah, Al, it was my first chance to check out Brandon Johns, and what really struck me was how unselfish of a player he is. You see so many star athletes try to do too much with the ball. They'll demand possession of it at the start of the play, just command their team from the top of the key or the top of the three-point arch. And Brandon Johns doesn't do that whatsoever. He makes the smart plays for his teams, and he really was outstanding throughout the game. You mentioned 21 points, 11 rebounds. He had a few big blocks down the stretch as well, and this was a game that was actually tied at halftime. And then East Lansing just managed to roll and run away within the second half. We had Steve Finnemore on the show a couple of weeks ago, if I remember. Or more than a couple, but a month and a half ago or so, given.
Yeah, right before the season started. Well, right when the season started, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said they play such an up-tempo style. And to encourage that, to make sure his players have no worries about maybe him getting upset at them if they make a bad play when trying to turn a rebound into a fast break, they don't keep track of turnovers. And that's exactly what happened in the second half. The team just started running. They got a few good rebounds, blocks, transition buckets, and then Brandon Johns just took over. Of course, he was matched up against Josh Horford, the youngest Horford brother.
Right.
And to be honest, it wasn't even a fair fight. Brandon Johns was by far the best player on the court. And
well, I think part of that, Isaac, I think when you look at Brandon Johns, something that struck me, the very first game of the year for East Lansing, when they took on DeWitt, that was a 60-45 win for East Lansing. And I did play-by-play for the team 92-1 that night with Eric Doc Love, and we watched Brandon Johns warm up. And he took his warm-up shirt off, and I looked at him. I'm like, oh, my gosh, Brandon Johns, he's been hitting the weights.
He's like, a big kid.
He's 15 years old, and you look at him, and he almost has as much girth as a Deontay Davis now in college. I mean, it's really remarkable. I remember talking to him after that game, and he mentioned how, he packed on, I don't know, like 10, 15 pounds of muscle and lived in the weight room this offseason. But he has a body that really can bully around anyone on any given night, because most nights he has a size differential when it comes to his height already. But now you add muscle to that equation and it makes him just a beast.
Well, there was a play in the third quarter where he was matched up with Josh Horford, and Brandon Johns just took a powerful dribble, knocked Horford on his back, and dunked it right after. So it was really an impressive performance. And like you said, we see so many of these 5-star recruits even, which Brandon Johns is. We see, or he either is or will be, he's right up there. He's in the top 50 as per 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
But you see him, and he is a big guy. He's not like Anthony Davis or Deontay Davis, where they come out of high school and they're still a little bit slender, because the height kind of is a little bit premature as opposed to the rest of the body developing.
Right.
It's natural. But for Brandon Johns, that's not the case whatsoever. The kid's got a college-sized body, and he's a sophomore.
He's 15 years old. What is this kid doing? I need to get on his workout plan, man. Oh,
exactly. And then he's a great passer as well. He made plays for Caleb Hoekstra down the stretch, which really helped them extend that lead in the third quarter,
right,
doubling their first half total in the second half. And Hoekstra finished with 12. He was 4-4, or had 4 threes on the night and shot a very high percentage too. So it was a great game for East Lansing. And I think this could be one of the best teams that Steve Fenimore has coached, just because watching them play, the way they battle through adversity, they really are poised and clutch as a team. And shoot, I mean, I can't see any team beating them. They beat Everett, of course, in a very tight matchup earlier this season, and that's some of their best competition. So I think this team will keep rolling.
Yeah, without a doubt. All right, well, just less than 10 minutes left in the show. Call in 517-355-9527. I want to mention this story because before we hit the second break briefly, because this is a story that we will go in depth during tomorrow's show. And you'll get my thoughts on this story. And it concerns now former head coach of the Charlotte boys basketball team, Steve Ernst. Ernst has resigned amid controversy over technical fouls that he received on the court. Again, this news broke a few days ago. Now, he graduated from Charlotte in 1986 and was hired as the team's head coach in October of last year. He quit on Monday. The news comes less than 1 week after Ernst received his sixth technical foul in 30 games on January 5th during a game against Eden Rapids. Ernst led Charlotte's varsity team to a district championship last year and has strong support in the community. On Monday morning, he told the Lansing State Journal that school administrators have taken issue with the number of technical fouls he's received since taking the coaching position. Ernst went on to say, quote, "On Wednesday, I was forced to sign a new individual development plan, otherwise known as an IDP, after I received my first technical of the year. I haven't had one in 19 games." Yeah, that's a very interesting story, especially, you know, when looking at what Ernst has done in, you know, last year, winning a district championship, really turning around that program. From my interactions I've had with Steve Ernst, he seems like a fantastic guy. And we hope to get him on our airwaves to talk about the situation, hopefully tomorrow. Keep it tuned. But if we don't get him, you better believe we're still going to dive into the story and sort of make any sort of conclusion to it. Always sticky, though, when you deal with parents, when you deal with school administrators, when you're dealing with kids, and when you're dealing with coaches, folks. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on this edition of WKAR's Current Sports by talking about the St. Louis Rams calling Los Angeles their new home. Don't go anywhere. You are tuned into Current Sports. Hey, folks, before we put a bow on today's Current Sports, I do have a few stories of breaking news to reveal to you all. About an hour ago, it was reported that Clemson defensive ends Shaq Lawson and Kevin Dodd and running back Wayne Gallman will be returning. Shaq and Kevin will be leaving for the NFL. So, again, Clemson defensive end Shaq Lawson and Kevin Dodd, they will be leaving for the NFL. Also, the Cleveland Browns have agreed to terms with Hugh Jackson to be their next head coach. Adam Schefter of ESPN reported that. And this just came through 2 minutes ago. Really troubling news here. Lawrence Phillips, the former Nebraska football star who was facing a murder charge, has been found dead this morning in his California prison. Authorities at Kern Valley State Prison said they are investigating the death as a suspected suicide. The prison staff was conducting security checks shortly after midnight local time today when they found Phillips unresponsive in his cell. Phillips was taken to a hospital where he was pronounced dead about 90 minutes late. He was on trial for the alleged murder of his former cellmate at the prison. And if he was convicted, he could have faced the death penalty. He has been in prison since October of 2008, where he was serving a 31-year sentence on various charges, including inflicting bodily harm, including domestic violence, corporal injury to a spouse, false imprisonment, and vehicle theft. He, of course, played running back for Nebraska in the 1990s. Before a brief stint in the NFL, his pro career was cut short by a series of off-the-field incidents and legal issues. How troubling is that story, Isaac? I mean, my goodness. I mean, Lawrence Phillips, I remember my dad talking about him in the 90s. Didn't really get a chance to see him. I mean, I was like 4 or 5 years old when he was really at the height of his career, when he was in college. But a very, very troubling, you know, stint for him. He goes in the NFL, has all of these off-the-field issues, gets into some trouble, goes to jail, and now this. I mean, you know, possibly killing his cellmate. I mean, crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. And my thoughts and prayers go out to the Phillips family. That's really troubling.
Yeah, life can really turn around on a dime. One day you're on top of the world in the NFL, one of the best prospects in the whole league, and the other day, I mean, this happened. So it's unfortunate. Obviously, we all hoped he'd kind of be able to do a little bit of a Maurice Clarett story and turn it around somewhat, but obviously not. But rest in peace and all condolences to his family, prayers to them.
Yeah, without a doubt. All right, just 2 minutes. Just I want to get your initial thoughts on this, Isaac, and then we'll, of course, elaborate on tomorrow's current sports. St. Louis Rams to L.A. Surprised?
No. St. Louis is a baseball city. I thought this was in the works for quite a while. And, you know, I think that this is actually a good move for both the team, the franchise, and the fans of L.A. Now, I think we're a little bit too early and a little bit anxious maybe when it comes to talking about other teams moving as well. I don't think San Diego should go. And the Raiders also. If San Diego does not go, the Raiders have the chance to go a few years later in 2017. So I think all of that is a little bit of a prelude to maybe a possible disaster down the road where LA can't handle two teams since they couldn't handle one in the first place. Mm-hmm. But I think St. Louis, I think that's a good move for both the team and the fans.
And I want people to understand, this is my perspective on this. The only reason that the LA Rams are now going to be the LA Rams, I should say, that the St. Louis Rams are going to be now the LA Rams, is that they wanted to be here because the NFL thought that they could make some money out there. It's L.A. You know, it's the number two market in the entire nation. Not because anybody was dying to see a football team in L.A. There weren't people out picketing saying we want this team in L.A. I'm going to elaborate on that opinion on tomorrow's Current Sports. Much love and much thanks to all of you guys out there for tuning in to today's show with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic afternoon. And be easy, people.